Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Not Mini Adults podcast, Pioneers for Children's Healthcare and Wellbeing. My name is David Cole and I'm joined again by my wife Hannah, and together we are the co-founders of children's charity Thinking of Oscar. This week we speak with Christian Kerner. Christian is the digital lead for the Copenhagen University Hospitals and was up until recently the technology scout for the soon-to-be brand new Copenhagen Children's Hospital. In his role as technology scout, Christian focused on future-proofing both the IT infrastructure and all the digital solutions around the hospital. Given that children today live and breathe digital technologies, this was by no means any mean feat. The new hospital is in the process of being built and will be for children, adolescents and also pregnant women, and will accommodate up to 900 patients, as well as 1,200 doctors, nurses and other staff members. The hospital emphasises the power of play as an integral part of the medical treatment, and the scheme for the building takes the form of two hands grasping together to support the various aspects of paediatric care. The theme for today's conversation, as you might expect, is all about play, and being from Denmark, as you would imagine, those awesome little mini coloured blocks of fun do of course crop up in the conversation. Good morning, Christian. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here and looking forward to have a good, nice conversation about children's hospitals and what is important in that connection.
Wonderful. So I think the first thing is, could you just tell us, tell us a little bit about your role? It's always fascinated me, knowing that, you know, you are essentially in charge of technology for this new Copenhagen Children's Hospital.
Yes, I just recently changed to a different position, but I'm still having a lot of the development responsibility with the Children's Hospital. And my role was, and to some extent still is, to be a technology scout for the Children's Hospital. And this is a development project where we are building a new children's hospital at the Copenhagen University Hospital. And in that capacity as a technology scout, I basically have the responsibility of everything digital. That's basically from the power plugs to the network connections to the whole internet or network infrastructure, but also to the solutions that are going to work. For instance, the patient entertainment systems, the logistics systems, everything is basically connected. And the thing is that when you try to develop new concepts and making a world-class new children's hospital, you quite quickly realize that the digital solutions are everywhere and need to be well functioning. And the thing is that I think the hospital sector has never been the bleeding edge on digital solutions, but more the opposite, basically. But what we try to build is a hospital, and my focus is to make a hospital that is designed for the future and doesn't extend the past unnecessarily.
And what opportunities has that given you then? Because I know that the physical hospital isn't going to be in place until, I think, 2025.
That's when we open for the patients. So we are actually in the demolition phase right now with some of the old buildings to make space for the new building. And we are in the tender process for the construction companies. And the thing is that that I've learned being a part of a building project is that basically when you make the contracts with the entrepreneurs and the contractors, then everything is basically already designed. Everything is sort of finished in how the building is going to look like. So you have to be quite early in your design phase to design a new building and be pretty certain about your concepts. But this children's hospital is an extension of the Copenhagen University Hospital, which is a 1,200 bed facility with a large part of pediatrics and adolescents. It is these patients groups that we are going to move into the children's hospital. So what we basically are doing is take them from the current facilities and move them together in a dedicated space. So what we try to do with many of our solutions is to actually already develop them now, test them out now, test the concepts, because the worst thing that we can do for both patients and our staff is to basically have a new building, new organizational structure, new technology at the same time. So then we're pretty sure we have a huge chaos. So what we try to do is actually have the organization in place pretty fairly early, the processes, test them out, and use some of the new technology are already in the QN facilities. Of course, the full potential is only realized when you have the whole shebang coming together with everything in the new building, but we try to get the most out of it already now.
We had a conversation the week before last, I think, with Neil Sabir from Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital, and he made a really interesting observation that it could be really tempting, and the focus of that conversation was data, whereas I know today we're talking more broadly, but he was talking about if you wait until you have everything in place, that your electronic patient record system is functioning as you would wish, if you wait for that core piece of work to be ready, before you start doing some of the more creative activities on top of that, you'll almost never really get there. And so they were able to make an upfront investment in a kind of, he didn't describe it as a sandpit, but a digital space that they could start doing stuff straight away. And they also devoted one particular ward in their instance to a set of staff that were really up for trying new things, and parents and children who, you know, were open-minded. And it just reminded me of that when you talked about trying it out now, you know, ironing out some of those potential teething problems before you launch in the new hospital.
Yes, definitely. And I know GOSH is doing a lot of great work with innovation at their QN facilities. And we try to do it in our ways as well. We have a maybe slightly different focus on some areas. We have some design principles that we work with, where we try to focus, for instance, on both design the new hospital for everyday living, because we know that we have many patients staying there for a long period of time. The Children's Hospital here in Copenhagen is going to be for the most specialized care. So we have many hospitals maybe only have people staying for a night or two, but we have patients that have to stay with us for several months, isolated into a certain area. And what we try to move, for instance, for the isolation, just a small point, is that instead of having them isolated to the patient room, we take it a whole area of the building and make it into an isolation area, so that patients that all need to be taking special care of, because they maybe had a bone marrow transplant or something like that, that they are in the same area, because the risk that they infect each other is very small, but outsiders coming in infected them is a huge risk. So instead of having them stay in their room, they can still go visit each other. So we try to work with concepts like that. It was a little bit a different direction than basically for the Great Ormond Street. But we try to find ways that we design the hospital so it's a more a place where you can stay for a longer period of time. We also try to design or work with concepts that make sure that we include children in the right way, because often children have been used to, or adolescents have been used to, that you talk about them, not to them, about their disease. So we try to really work with the charter, children's charter, on how staff should talk to the families and include the children in the process in talking about their diseases and making them part of the decision process as well. What should happen for them so they feel included? So we call that see me, ask me, let me, basically empowerment. We also have the principle of clear zones. Usually it can be a little bit stressful to be at a hospital, because you don't really know where you should stay, where you should be. And for instance, one of the digital ways I've seen issues with that is, for instance, if you have a patient screen, that you can use. Then I've seen a lot of solutions where you could say that, okay, then we have the screen and then the physician can come in and use his identification card and take over the screen and use it to do some charting, and then the patient can get the screen back and use them for themselves. But actually we did some testing with that and did some observation studies with that, and we realized that both the physician and the patient were really annoyed that they were taking the screen that really was the patient's screen up to that point and taking ownership of that. So it wasn't really the patient's screens, but it wasn't neither the physician's screen, because he had to sort of take it away if it was a child seeing a movie or something like that. It really gave some strange situations. So what we try to do is basically divide things between what is the clinician's work zone and what is there for the patient.
That's really interesting, because you talked about in some of the conversations we've had previously how the conversation, or you said, you know, we'd done some thinking and we nearly got it wrong, but then we sat down with parents and children and and we realized things that we wouldn't otherwise have worked out. And I think that's an example of that, where the intention was absolutely good, but until you tested it with
And sometimes what we all also realized is sometimes we need to do observational studies and basically sit down and watch what is happening, because people aren't always doing what they say they are doing. So I don't think we had observed how much of a hassle it was by the screen sharing without actually observing it, because they were saying, oh, it's nice, technical that you can do that. But when we asked them, oh, how did you feel when you did that? Because you sort of, I have to take the screen. We could see that it was a strange situation.
And did you have other examples? We spoke to a friend, a contact of ours has become a friend on the second podcast we did, Dom.
I think Christian knows Dom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've talked to him a little bit about the Explorer app, and actually really would love to get it in a Danish version over here. So I'm still working on finding the funding and the person for that. So awesome app.
You're going to be pleased to hear that.
That's good.
So you're really familiar. I mean, he had a daughter, as you know, who had been very well and had this exact experience that when she was in hospital care and as a young teen, there wasn't a dialogue between her and the medics around her. And so he decided to do something about it. So we know that example, and you've described another. What are the other ways that you've chosen to do the empowerment and involvement of your child patients?
Yeah, the last two principles that we have is basically the good journey, that we need to connect things both prior to coming to the hospital and while they're at the hospital and after the hospital stay. So, or in between hospital stays, because many of our patients have several ambulatory visits and then they stay at the hospital for a longer period of time and then they come out again and then revisit maybe a couple of months later. And often patients are followed for years at end with some interval. And it's important that they feel that the connection that they maybe created in the beginning is continuing over that whole period. So what is really annoying for patients and their families is that if, for instance, the physician is changing every time you come to the hospital, because the trust level, the relationship that you build is really important in the conversation that you can have and in the trust of the treatment and everything about the whole situation. And one of the things that we say in that connection is also that we have to remember that even while at the hospital, your primary focus is to treat patients and their illnesses. Mm-hmm. You have to remember they're a whole human being with a whole group of relatives and family around them and their friends as well. So, and you have to, as a hospital, to cater to all these levels or include them. You can't just be focused on the basic treatment, because that's basically how you maybe perceived hospital care. If you go a couple of hundred years back, or 100 years back, you basically came to the hospital and were lined up in a line before seeing the physician, and it was basically just
an industry. And we will share some videos and some pictures of the hospital, because the hospital itself looks stunning. And I think I'm right in saying it's kind of two hands brought together
It's like two hands reaching out and basically, making a star shape. The star shape is really great for navigation as well as inviting in a lot of light from the outside, so it doesn't feel like dark. It also gives some opportunity to make it feel a little bit more like a home. Basically, we said the whole design principle is basically that you have the street from the outside, you come through the area around the hospital where we are planning to have some playgrounds and other areas where you can sit outside with park-like structure. It's like the front porch. And then you come into the hospital and it should feel a little bit more like a living room. So basically, as you come up in the hospital, we have some open areas where you can sit and eat or meet up or talk. And then you can move into the hallways, into the closer to the patient rooms. And we have the possibility to sit outside the patient room on a small area. And you can actually look into the room. So for instance, as an adult, if in Denmark, at our hospital, we always have a co-admitted parent, even if it's in intensive care or normal care, there's always one parent admitted with the child. I think that's a really good thing and a really important thing. Absolutely. And the good thing is there's good support as well. If you have a day job, that you can get some reimbursement from the state while being admitted at the hospital. Because, for instance, if it's a bone marrow transplant, you're staying there for months on an end. But basically, outside the patient room, going back to the sort of the structure, you can sit and watch into the patient room through a small window, but you can still have a conversation out there, or you can be in the patient room, and there's place for basically for both parents to actually stay there for the night, so together with the child. So it's been a huge effort for us to get enough space that two parents can stay together with the child. We also have in neonatal, people having their family life starting for a long period of time, maybe a couple of months staying at the hospitals. And that's the beginning of their family life. So it should give a homey feeling. So it should be like sort of the bedroom. And then the great thing with the whole finger structure is that the fingertips are actually terraces or winter gardens. So you have some private outside space where you can go and sit. And it's a little bit like your backyard. That's the idea, that you have sort of a semi-private space where you can sit and still enjoy some sunlight or some fresh air.
Yeah. One of the things, and you touched on it, but one of the things that Hannah, you picked up on was that this hospital is not only open to children, but also open to expectant mothers. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be, as you say, neonatal, but also a maternity unit as well.
Yeah. And it was sort of a decision that was happened a long time ago, but basically taking care of all children from the age of 0 to 18, but also including the pregnant women and the newly born. It's actually quite a difficult group to design for, because basically what you realize when you look at the patient groups is that you basically have to design to nearly every age group except maybe the elderly. And there's a huge difference between a 7-year-old and a 17-year-old. Mm-hmm. On what they like and what they have as their preferences. And maybe going a little bit back to the digital sphere, is that we will also realize that the best way that we can adapt a patient room is to make it possible that you could put your own images on the TV screen as a screensaver. You can select your own lighting, but also make it possible to play your own music in the patient rooms. But make it possible that one patient that maybe likes death metal or something like that doesn't disturb everybody else that would like some more calm music. So. But anyway, it should be possible to put in your own preferences. Until now, we also have had multi-patient rooms. Every room in the new hospital is going to be single-patient rooms. It's been a huge discussion for us whether we can handle to have single-patient rooms, because you also lose a little bit of that interaction between another family or another child or another youngster lying in the bed next to you. But in the end, we decided to go all in and say everything is going to be a single-patient room, and that's basically in respect of the families. Because it's really difficult to have a family life in that situation with when you have to share that with other people.
I know one of the most important areas we're going to talk about with you this morning is play, and I know that I think they're going to jump in on that in a minute. But just before we leave this subject, is there much data that substantiates what I think I'm hearing? Because this is not just about making people comfortable and being kind. To me, it makes sense that this will improve outcomes for children. It's going to improve people's well-being, mental health in the longer term. One imagines that there are going to be very strong correlations between having a positive experience at this time and a supported and feeling safe experience now, and how an attitude to healthcare in, you know, much further down the line, but also in the short and medium term, even recovery times could be accelerated. It feels very important, but how much of this is gut and experience, and how much is already proven out?
We actually did a huge data research. I think we looked over a couple of thousand published articles on this topic to find out what is evidence that is out there, or the data that is out there on these topics. And actually what we realized is that there isn't that much data available, but there are a lot of indications that this is the case. Yeah. So what we are trying to do together with one of the big foundations that actually supports this children's hospital, no advertising, but it's a small toy company built making plastic bricks that you can put together out of Denmark that has supported this project. And they also funded a research center that is going to look into how play can impact outcomes. And basically the last of the five principles was actually, I was going to go in that direction of myself as well, was integrated play. And we see integrated play as a core on all the different design principles. So,
well, so, I mean, obviously that was a key area that we wished to talk about as well. And I think it was very, Before Oscar was in hospital, I don't think we ever thought that there would be an option for an opportunity for children to play whilst they were, in a hospital setting. And we are still in touch with the play specialists that looked after Oscar, and they were such an important part of his care whilst he was there. And we've still got, you know, pictures that he did during that time and all that kind of stuff. But it was a statement, I think, that is being made about this, the hospital, is that children play and learn even though they are in hospital. And that's a key principle around everything that you're trying to do, right?
Definitely, yeah. And basically, we believe that play can promote healing because it can promote social relationship and collaboration. It can promote physical development. It can promote emotional stability, cognitive skills, and even motivate in many other ways. So we think that play is a way that children experience and cope with their environment. So children don't stop playing when they get ill. They just keep on playing. They need to do that. It's a way that they learn and cope with the environment. And I think it's really, really important to let them do that, because else it makes it more difficult to cope with the thing that they're maybe critical ill. And I think I mentioned it to you at some point, David, was that I realized going to the children's oncology department that I met the most smiling people there, the people that gave the most warmth and everything. And I thought, this is interesting in many ways. And I asked them, you experience so much hardship and sorrow in other cases. How can you keep smiling? And they basically said, we have to keep smiling because we have to keep living. We have to remember that this is what, in my opinion, also life is about. So you can't stop living just because you have hardship. So it's something you need to level off. So I think that's really important, and it's something that I still remember fondly, and I still considered really important, not just in pediatrics, but also in adult medicine and everywhere else, that we have to remember that you have to be serious, you have to be professional about it, but play and playful approach to things is something that you can use everywhere.
Still to come on the Not Mini Adults podcast, we talk about how children will be experiencing play in the new hospital, and also the importance of using patients in the design and innovation process. Well, and you mentioned the research project. So, you know, being in Denmark, you have the fortunate advantage that you're close to the home of Lego. So we'll say the name. But what struck us is that there hasn't been really any research done. So everyone believes that play is important. You know, I think just intrinsically we believe that, especially as parents. You know, we see our children play and we understand that they learn, you know, in that endeavor. But there's never been any research done in terms of the correlation between play and how children get better, or, you know, get through trauma, or whatever it might be. So that in itself is a, you know, it's a really, really interesting thing that you guys are doing.
Yeah, and basically we, a hospital and being part of a universal hospital is always about research, education, and treatment of patients. And we really try to think, we believe that we here in Denmark have something about an understanding on how play can impact this, and are going to work very heavily on doing research and doing some evidence-based support for that play can promote these things that I mentioned before.
How is play going to be experienced by children in the new hospital?
We have, how do we translate that? We have, for instance, a work together with an experimental museum that where you can try different physical things out. I don't know what you call it in English, but we are working with that you have different exhibits at the hospital where you can learn about the body and how the body works. Mm-hmm. But it's in ways that you basically can play as well. And that's basically a little bit in the center of the hospital design, in the midst of that. As you move out into the winter gardens in the fingertips, it's actually going a little bit more out into nature. Mm-hmm. And we have different play installs where it's basically with different animals that maybe can be a slide or something like that inside the animal. Mm-hmm. And for instance, we have an owl in one of the fingertips looking down on the ground in front. And there are some rodents in the front that are sitting there, and it's a play install as well. So there are different ways that we try to have the building as well inspire to do some play. On the other hand, we also try to work with some technologies like augmented reality to actually break some barriers. As I talked about the isolation before, we believe that augmented and virtual reality is actually something that can help in those situations. For instance, it might be that if you use your telephone and you suddenly look with your telephone up at the owl, it sort of starts blinking, maybe starts flying off, going after the rodents. But it might also be that you can collect some things like some seeds for some plants that you can plant in your room. And the seeds for a patient that isn't very mobile is maybe very easy for them to collect the seeds. But for somebody who needs a little bit more exercise, they have to go all the way to the floor and all the way to the ceiling, all the way to the floor, all the way to the ceiling, and do that a couple of times. So they get some exercise through play. And that's actually a little bit inspired about a talk to one of our social workers at the hospital, sort of like a play agent, who was told that one of the oncology, the children in the oncology department, the physical therapist wanted them to sit up for 1 hour each day. And this boy didn't really want to sit up. He really struggled with sitting up for that 1 hour per day. But then this play agent came with a card game called Uno. You have that in the UK.
Uno, yes.
Uno, yeah. And they played for, I think, an hour and a half and had a blast. And he wasn't complaining. He wasn't complaining about his pain because they were sort of playing. But he still got the exercise he needed out of that. So I think that's how you can connect things together. the Isolation Breaker project is basically also trying to connect a little bit back out to the school classes so that they maybe can, at the school class where they're usually attending when they're not at hospital, they can have them have some exercise, some exercises or some things that they solve there and then send it back to the hospital, so we make some connections in those ways as well. Because I believe technology can actually connect a lot over a distance, and that's sometimes one of the biggest challenges while being admitted at the hospital, that you lose your connection to your siblings, your friends and stuff like that, and you maybe don't have that much energy, you don't feel like you, as the other adolescents don't feel like, the teenagers don't feel like showing themselves, but it might be through an avatar, it's okay that they still are in connection with their friends, and that's something that we also try to work with.
I've been thinking, as you've been talking about mental well-being, and a lot of clinicians mm-hmm. we've been speaking to are increasingly concerned about anxiety in kids mm-hmm. of all ages. And I wondered how the design for the new hospital and all of the setup that you're describing will cater for mental well-being and supporting those kinds of concerns as well as everything else.
One of the things that has been very strongly in the design principle is that we have to design the hospital in a welcoming, friendly manner. So, for instance, the materials that we select aren't just blank white walls with 90 degrees corners everywhere, but a little bit more organic in its design. I think most people know when I say Scandinavian light design with lots of light wood and stuff like that. And we actually worked a lot with finding materials that are still hygienic, but can be used in those settings as well. So, David, if you connect some of the videos of the hospital, I think it's quite obvious the design that's happening there. Coming a little bit back to some of the interaction and how you work with clinicians and the whole perception in the communication, and where we work on a charter that basically goes back to how do you engage the whole family in a good way? How do you talk to the children? How do you get them connected back into what is happening for them? And then all the way over to the digital solutions that should be individualized. So it's something that you can get sort of a safe feeling around. So you basically have the patient room to your liking. So it's more like your home instead of something that is dangerous for you. I think that's quite important to get the whole feeling that, okay, this place is for me. It's not something for somebody else. It's actually for me and it's going to help me. And that's, I think, is quite crucial in reducing the anxiety that you're talking about. It's also something that we've seen in many of the articles that we have looked at, that it's really important to work with the anxiety.
Given that children are growing up in a much more digitalized world than we ever did, and you're a technology scout, you know, mm-hmm. how that it must have been a wonderful opportunity to, you know, find these technologies, bring them into the hospital. There's been, I think, you know, lots of conversations around, if we think about the future and what children are utilizing now, hospitals need to be bringing those kind of technologies in, because that's how children just, instinctively know how to react with, you know, whether it be a, you know, an Alexa type system or a tablet or whatever it is. You know, that must have been interesting. But also, how do you make sure that when the hospital is open in 4 or 5 years' time, that everything's still current?
That's a really good question. But the thing is, in some ways, we all often have an idea that development is going faster than it really is. If you have a medium time frame, but if you have a short time frame, you often think, okay, it should go faster than it should. Hospitals aren't, like I said earlier, bleeding edge. And often I get inspired by, for instance, what is the hospitality industry doing with hotel rooms and stuff like that? How do they make people feel welcome when they come to the hotel and feel that it's a nice place to stay? Are there some of those inspirations that we can transfer to the hospital? Are there In other connections, it's maybe a little bit more logistical, but is there, for instance, some inspiration that we can take out of the airlines and the airports about how get the logistics to flow without and have the waiting time to be a nice experience instead of a stressful experience? Because I think a nicely designed airport is a lot better to stay at and not as stressful than a boring airport, yeah, where you feel you have to run from one end to the other. So I think we can take inspiration from many of those places to put in and to make it a better experience. And that's what I often do. And actually, one of the things that we also looked at was actually also was with airplanes. You have these black boxes inside the an airplane, and we use that to get some inspiration on how can we improve, for instance, outcomes in a surgical ward. And we use the sort of the black box idea to record everything happening in an operating room and bring that into play. It's not something that is something that the patient perceives, but it's something how can you use new technology inspired from other industries and put it into a hospital.
You've read Matthew Say's Black Box Thinking.
Actually, I never got around it. You sent it to me. It's on my wishing list, but I have a backlog. but we actually have the first operating room running with this black box technology. We also got inspired from the Formula One with the pit stop a little bit, because one of the struggles that we realized when with mapping out all the patient pathways on the hospital was that you basically had to have a degree as a project manager to handle your child's disease. Because you had so many appointments with different places, you had to go and we had to be there at that time and how do we get there and stuff like that, that we realized we had to rethink a little bit how we organize the whole flow, because it was organized very much out of the hospital's premises and the physician's time schedule. And just a slight adaptation to that, I made it possible to say that we want to have a pit stop sort of thinking, where we have a lot of measurements taken before the coming into the hospital. And then we have all the specialists ready, sort of going in and doing the interventions and sending them off as quickly, but in a good way, safe way. So you don't have to stay for long periods of time, have lots of waiting time. So that actually already made us reorganize our ambulatory time schedules between different departments. So it's easier to schedule same day appointments. In some cases, we have patients traveling in from maybe having 10 hours traveling time to the hospital for maybe 10 minute visit with the hospital. So we really try to reconsider how we do that. In this whole corona situation, we also have improved a lot with the virtual solutions that we bring into play. So there's been a big shift also from the clinician side that we can use virtual technologies a lot more than we currently do. So I believe that we will see, back to your original question, I get inspired by other industries and try to bring that into play in the hospital setting and then grab things as they come by and see, okay, how can it be adapted to this situation where we are at the hospital? I also try to understand a lot of what is the underlying need more than what is said that they want. Because often there's an old quote, I don't think it's totally true, but that Henry Ford should have asked his prospective customers, what do they need? And they answered they wanted faster horses. I think it's pretty good he didn't make faster horses, but something else. But it's a little bit back to that you need to really understand the needs that's underlying and design for that instead of maybe doing what they believe from the clinician side, for instance, is the first best solution.
I think a number of the points that you've made recently could well translate into the answer to my next question, but I want to not put words in your mouth so much. You talked about who inspires you. The work that you're doing here will be inspirational to many others. So my question for you is about what can, although I appreciate that not many folk get the opportunity to build a hospital ground up in the way that you are able to work at the moment, but could you pick out two or three principles perhaps that others might be able to take from you?
Yeah, I think actually the last point I made, that actually go out and see what people do instead of listen to what they say they do, is actually really, really important, and understand and keep asking why? Because I've seen many restrictions and many things that I was told is not possible. But when you dig into it and understand the underlying requirements to the full extent, you often see that you have a much bigger design scope to make new solutions. I think those are some of the core things that I always bring with me. And then being humble about it. I'm basically the IT guy coming into a hospital setting, and I know these people are doing magic in their expertise, and understand that I need to support their way of working. I got a lot of inspiration as well from IDEO with some design principles that they have, where they say that they're a design company that has done a lot of work for Apple in the past originally. But they basically have these design principles that that you have to cater for three dimensions. You have to have the business viability, the technical feasibility, but you also have to have the user desirability. And many hospital solutions are often built out of either the technical needs or the business requirements, organizational needs, blah, 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 but never the user desirability. But as soon as you introduce something where you can see, okay, what's in it for me? What's the value for me as a nurse, as a physician, or as a patient? And I see that I really can use that. It's a lot easier. And you see sort of the light coming up in people's eyes, and they say, oh, finally, there's something that is actually useful instead of just oppressive from a technical point of view. Yeah.
I think that's essential advice, not just in terms of if anyone's looking to try and do something different in a hospital setting, but just generally in terms of innovation and new creation and what have you. I've got a couple of, I guess, last questions. One is, we heard at the beginning that your role has now expanded, so you're looking at a wider portfolio in terms of the Copenhagen hospital system. What will you take from working with a children's hospital into other settings?
I mean, I touched a little bit in the beginning at an earlier point, but basically seeing that whole understanding on that you have to cater for the whole person is something that is really, really important. And I've seen nurses being really well at doing interventions on a child that is maybe a sterile clinical procedure, but because I did it in a playful, trustful approach, it made the whole situation a lot easier. And I think seeing that way, that when you connect to the person, and not just to the patient, but to the person in front of you, a lot of things, anxiety, fear, everything dissipates a little bit. And it's a lot easier to talk about what is necessary and do the treatment. And I think that's something that needs to be taken into account everywhere at the hospital. So it's not just a question about that the treatment should be good enough, but the whole experience from a patient value-based approach should be in focus. I see a lot of shift going to talking more about the value-based approach. And I think that's really important, really core to that. And I've seen that live in a pediatric setting. I see that coming forward as well in the adult setting. So it's some of the things that I take with me, but there are a lot of other things. I'm happy that I still can get to work with the pediatric setting and at the children's hospital and the development of the solutions there, as well as taking that into the rest of the university hospital setting.
Absolutely. And so my final question, and the question that we're asking everybody that comes on the podcast, is if you could change anything in pediatrics, if you could do anything, what would it be?
Except having a solution to every disease. actually, I've seen over the years that I've been in the hospital settings, a huge uptake in people that come out of the hospital cured of their disease. And I think that's an awesome development. I hope that, of course, continues. But one thing I really hope is that there are resources enough in the hospital setting that you can give people a good experience all the way around. So it's a 360-degree approach to the person that you meet. And that even spoils over to the technical solution that I work with, the digital side of things, that they work 365 days in the year, 360 degrees around, and in a way that are easy and good to work. So my hope is that through my work and through my dedication to what I do, that that I can help coming closer to that.
Christian, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you.
Thank you very much. It was joy is all on my side, and it's great that you do these podcasts, and it's very inspirational. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us on the Not Mini Adults podcast. All the details of the show can be found in the show notes, including details of the amazing new Copenhagen Children's Hospital, and of course ways in which you can contact us. As ever, if there is somebody that you believe we should be talking to, then please do get in touch. Next week we'll be speaking to Dr. Damien Rowland. Damien is a consultant emergency paediatrician at Leicester Children's Hospital. We talked to Damien about a number of topics, but the underlying theme is social media and how Damien uses it to assist in his work. We very much look forward to you joining us then.